in-office studios of his eye care practices in Nashville, Tennessee. It's As I See It with Dr. Jeff Kegaris, your source for eye care education and receiving the type of patient relationship you deserve. It is time for a patient revolution. And now, your host, Dr. Jeff Kegaris.
We're speaking today with Dr. Kelly Davis, a senior pediatric resident in the Southeast United States. Dr. Davis, Kelly, thank you for being with us and sharing your perspective on this COVID-19 community outbreak.
Absolutely.
First, we want to say this, Dr. Davis, you are on the front lines of our healthcare system and the healthcare response, and we really appreciate that, both from our staff and our patients and the community.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So we're hearing this. We're hearing for the most part that children are not getting sick with coronavirus infections. Is that really true?
No, children are definitely getting affected by it. It's just a decreased amount from the typical viruses that we see, like the flu, that tends to affect the extreme age groups. And it's not affecting children as much as those other viruses are.
Do we have any idea why the flu might be, why kids might be more vulnerable to, say, the flu, but they're not as vulnerable to this particular coronavirus?
No, we don't know why. It's not affecting children right at the moment.
Okay.
As much.
We're kind of learning a lot about this as we go, aren't we?
Yes, definitely. It's a virus that mutated and, we've never dealt with it before, which is why it's causing so many problems right now.
Are children still likely to be carriers, even though they may not present with symptoms or signs?
We don't necessarily know at this point who are carriers because we're not really testing necessarily everybody who's asymptomatic. We're not sure who carriers are, but children are likely to show symptoms as well when they get sick with it.
Okay. I've seen an interesting thing. Most countries are doing what the United States is, which is quarantining. But there are a couple European countries, small ones, it might be Denmark or Norway, that are actually saying, you know what, it's better if we expose the majority of the population, and by that, people will build up immunity and this won't be a long-term problem. So that kind of takes me to the children's situation. Is it actually maybe better if some of the kids do get exposed to this, and will they build up immunity?
So the whole point of quarantining and trying to do the social distancing right now is not the fact that we're just going to all of a sudden kill the virus. The problem is that we don't have enough hospital utilities and specifically ventilators and such things and hospital beds to accommodate the amount of people who would get sick and that specifically have serious complications to this. So having everyone exposed at the same time will ultimately lead to major problems in the healthcare field, including in pediatrics, because we just don't have enough supplies. Whereas some of the smaller countries, if they have enough supplies, then maybe they would be able to do it. But just because we are social distancing right now doesn't mean we're necessarily going to decrease the amount of people who get exposed in the long run, but we're as they say, flattening the curve and making it a little bit longer of a process so that everybody who does get sick has the best chance at receiving the best medical care.
Okay, so kind of a balancing of supply and demand, if you will, there. Speaking of supplies, how are you all doing in your outpatient and hospital settings? Do you feel like you have enough supplies to care for some of these potentially symptomatic or at-risk patients?
We have supplies, at least in the pediatric world. We have enough supplies to care for the patients, but we don't necessarily have enough supplies to adequately protect the healthcare providers, because the majority of the time these individuals who get sick and are admitted to a hospital are admitted to the ICU, where they require a lot of specialties working on them. So that's a lot of physicians, nurses, respiratory therapists, even all the way down to someone cleaning their room. And all of those people need protective equipment on. And our hospital, and I know the surrounding hospitals, are running low on that protective equipment, which is leading to more of a problem with our healthcare workers getting sick.
Hmm. Are you seeing also just in the ancillary staff, people cleaning, delivering food, et cetera, are you seeing people staying home or quitting their job, or are you getting more people that want to apply and help out?
I can't really speak to who's applying for these things. And honestly, I really don't see, you know, those specific people. All of our protocols are kind of changing at the moment. So just because I don't see someone walking around doesn't mean they're not working. It may just be because we're trying to limit the exposure.
Gotcha. So what's interesting is that if you read the press, which is a dangerous thing, I think, sometimes, or if you just listen only to a press release or a public official making comments, you get this impression that no kids get this. But I kind of infer from you that there actually are kids that are admitted in serious condition, maybe to the ICU even, that that are corona positive. Is that correct?
Yes, definitely. I mean, just like adults, kids also have chronic medical conditions that put them at risk for any time they get a viral illness. There are certain people who are higher risk, and that's the same in children. So, yes, there are definitely kids who are testing positive and who are requiring hospital care, specifically intensive care, once they have tested positive.
Okay. We hear a little bit about some early trials, again, anecdotal, but early information about certain drugs being used on a compassionate care basis, hydroxychloroquine, azithromycin. How does that apply to children? Are those available options for you if you all are trying to treat children, or is that not?
So we have an infectious disease specialist group with a specialist pharmacist who works with all of our kids that are admitted to the hospital, whether it be COVID-19 or any other pathogen. But they are specifically working with the FDA and seeing what's available and what we can use. So it's really a case-by-case basis. So yes, we definitely have kids who are positive for COVID-19 who are on those drugs for compassionate care.
Okay. When kids get immunizations, their standard battery of immunizations as they grow up, are any of those immunizations helpful in the immune response to COVID or to coronavirus?
Not specifically, but getting your vaccines strengthens your immune system and helps to fight. So the worst thing that someone could get would be to not get vaccinated and then they get measles on top of also having COVID-19. That's a comorbidity, that's a problem, and could lead to more complications with COVID-19.
So once again, when we really talk science and fact, immunizations are actually protecting children. Would you agree?
110%.
Very good. Okay, that's not what the topic is today. We may talk about that on a different call, but let's say this. What do you advise parents who may have a child at home who has the sniffles, maybe has a little bit of a sore throat or a fever? What would you recommend that they do at this point?
So I would recommend, number one, kind of the parents assessing how critical their child is. If they're sitting, playing, eating, drinking, but they just kind of feel bad, then that's something to definitely call your pediatrician about. Do not go to the office. Call them and say that your child is sick and that you need to speak with a provider. Most pediatricians' offices are still at least open to receive kind of telemedicine calls, or sometimes they have the ability to have FaceTime encounters with these kids. Now, if the child is having difficulty breathing, if they are unable to eat or drink, or if they're really just not acting like themselves, you can't get them to really respond, wake up very well, any of those things, if you see their ribs kind of pulling really hard and having a hard time breathing, those are indications to go to the emergency room. But the first person you see, you should let know that your child is having respiratory symptoms so that those healthcare workers can protect themselves in the event that that child is positive for COVID-19.
Okay. We understand that fevers sometimes go along with this, if not maybe the majority of the time, I'm not sure. But what really is a fever? I mean, my normal body temperature is 98.6. If I'm 99.2, do you guys medically from a physician standpoint, consider that a fever?
So, no, we do not. In the medical terms, a fever is 100.4 or above. Now, with this pandemic, we are decreasing that a little bit just to kind of catch those people who are just starting to have a fever. So we're going down to about 100 degrees in our healthcare system right now where I'm working. But that may differ from place to place. But definitely 100.4 or above is considered a fever.
So if I go back to that analogy again, and I'm not trying to pin you down as much as just trying to help the parents out there who may have children, if my child just seems a little bit under the weather, but and I check the temperature and it's 99.1, but they're watching TV, they're doing things, but they just seem a little groggy, would I still call the physician, or do I kind of wait until they have more of a fever than that?
I think that's all kind of more dependent on the patient, and you know, every parent knows their child best, and mm-hmm. So if they look like they're developing an illness, then you can always call your pediatrician and ask for advice. Whereas if you think they kind of just have allergies, since it is beginning to be pollen season, mm-hmm. and they have a known history of having allergies, then you can kind of treat it as such.
Yeah, and we're definitely seeing a lot of that in the Southeast with all the
yes,
pollens
definitely.
Out. You know, by the time I go back to my car, it will be covered in a yellow dust today.
Absolutely.
Along those lines, typically a lot of parents will treat their children with, say, children's Motrin or ibuprofen. In the event that they have this type of coronavirus, what's the latest on, should I use ibuprofen or should I stick to acetaminophen? What can you guide us on there?
So at this time, you know, there was a study that came out that was talking to the point that ibuprofen may not be good for patients who are positive for COVID-19. So, kind of like we had spoken about earlier, there's really not a ton of evidence about this virus, but all other kind of clinical indications, we see that that's really not the case. So it really depends. You know, I think if it were my child, I would start out with treating with Tylenol, but if the fevers are getting really high and potentially needing the intensive care unit or being hospitalized, then I think you have to weigh the risks and benefits. And in my opinion, keeping a fever down is more beneficial than something that we don't know to be fact yet.
Gotcha. So you're in a unique situation because I know that you work in the neonatal intensive care, pediatric intensive care, up on the wards or on the clinics, and then also in an outpatient setting. And recently, you were working outpatient and potentially exposed to maybe a COVID-19 patient. And so you've kind of had to self-quarantine for a couple of days. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. So the most important thing for healthcare providers, for really anybody, is that face mask that healthcare providers are wearing. That's our biggest bang for our buck to protect us. And so if someone's not kind of open and honest about the symptoms that they're having, or if we are running out of masks because people are hoarding them at home, we're taking healthcare providers out of the hospitals because they have to quarantine at home.
Gotcha. So brings up another point. Child comes in, and we're trying to screen this so that we don't have sick children, sick patients come into the office. But let's say one slips by and they got a little bit of sniffles in the exam room. Is the mask worn by the doctor protecting the doctor or protecting the patient? And so in that case, if we had one mask, would we give it to the patient to wear or would we give it to the doctor to wear?
So you're right, in an ideal world, both the patient and the physician would be wearing a mask, and specifically if the patient is coughing. But also, to get to the main question, if we had to pick one, we would give it to the patient because they're ultimately the one who would potentially be spreading. Now, if the physician were to be sick at that moment, then they should be wearing a mask as well. But it's the person who's ill at that time.
Gotcha. And what other precautions, let's say you're in the hospital setting and you're on the pediatric ICU floor, I assume, is there a special COVID-19 floor or bay or ward, if you will, for these kids, or are they just interspersed in the hospital as normal?
So to a point, they're interspersed as normal, but we have certain rooms that are negative pressure rooms that are a little bit more protective, and so cases that we get concerned about, like tuberculosis or other things that could potentially harm any kids that are admitted on the same floor, we always put them in those rooms. So right now, our kids that we're concerned about and really have a high risk of being positive for COVID-19 are placed in those rooms. With that being said, we really only have 1 to 2 of those negative pressure rooms per floor for about 3 floors of a children's hospital. So that's running out very quickly.
Gotcha. How long, if you're testing somebody, whether it's you, because you're self-quarantining, I think you were tested, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, how long will it take for you to get results? And if I have a child that you want to test, how long would it take for me to know and get the test results back, positive or negative?
So it depends where the test is sent at the moment. And also there's a rapid test coming out very soon as we can make more reagent for it. But so if your lab result was sent to Quest, a lab that's in California, you're looking at more of a 7-day turnaround for your lab results. And those are for people who are deemed relatively low risk. Those who are doing well at home, you know, relatively speaking, you know, they're not having a hard time breathing. They're still eating and drinking okay. They just kind of feel crummy from being sick. Healthcare workers and people who are admitted to a hospital or to an ICU, we need to know those results much quicker because they are in a higher risk category, whether that be spreading or as far as their treatment. So those people, their test is sent to specifically to the state, and those results typically turn around in about 48 to 72 hours.
Okay, so a lot quicker from that standpoint. So, one, I know you're very, very busy, and we really appreciate you sharing your expertise with us, particularly as it pertains to children and the risk of coronavirus. One of the things I take from this is, even though kids may not be as likely to get this or show symptoms of this, they very much can carry it. They very much can have serious complications. And it sounds like you definitely are in agreement to keep social distancing, self-quarantine at home, and follow the guidelines that the government's really recommending right now to try to balance this curve. Is that right?
100%. And really making sure that, you know, if a parent is feeling sick or positive for COVID-19, trying to keep that child away from the parent, if at all possible.
Okay. So once again, thank you very much. Is there anything that you want to bring out, say, recommend to us with regard to COVID-19 or kids at this time that we haven't touched on?
I think just the really important thing for everyone to know and remember is that, you know, all the healthcare professionals that are caring for you went into this field because we have a passion for helping others. And that hasn't changed despite being in a pandemic. However, we do hope that you would respect us in the same ways as to making sure that, you know, you're not hoarding medical supplies at home, because while you see us as physicians, nurses, respiratory therapists, we're also people and we have families at home. So hoarding those supplies and causing the medical profession to get sick not only hurts the general public, because that's one less doctor, one less nurse, one less respiratory therapist that's not able to be at work caring for you, but ultimately hurts the public in a different sense, because we're carrying that virus now home with us, and that's causing social distancing. So the really important thing is to help out those medical professionals that you know. If you're living in the same neighborhood as someone who's working in a hospital, just recognize that, you know, they don't have an option to stay at home right now. So if they have a child at home, offer to watch that child. If they, haven't been able to stop at the grocery store because of either the public criticizing them and not wanting them to be in public, or just them not having time because we are working extra hours, offer to, you know, go on a little grocery run for them, offer to pick up some extra things, and just really ask if there's anything you can do to support them at this time, because that's how we get through this, is that we help each other out.
That's really the essence of community, isn't it? Where you have healthcare workers helping to do extra for us, we need to be thinking about what we can do extra to help the healthcare workers, right?
Definitely. Community's full circle. You can't have one thrive without the other.
Well, Dr. Davis Kelly, we really want to thank you for spending some time with us. You are on the front lines of our healthcare response. We recognize that. We appreciate that very, very much. And good luck to you. And we hope to maybe rediscuss some of these things with you in a couple of months. And by that point, we hope that the curve is maybe plateaued or balanced, and see if there are any things that we have learned over this next couple of months, and what might be different or what might be the same in your pediatric world. So thank you very, very much again, Kelly.
Absolutely.